You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
So I'm just going to go ahead and start, and I'd like to begin by welcoming everyone to this afternoon's webinar. Today we're going to be talking about highlights from the Sentinel Initiative public workshop that was held recently in Washington, D.C. I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform here at Brookings, and this is part of our series of initiatives related to the Sentinel program and post-market surveillance of medical products more generally. What we're going to focus on today is that fourth annual Sentinel Initiative public workshop. It was held on January 18th, convened by the Brookings Institution with the collaboration of a wide range of public and private experts and participants. At that public workshop, we discussed the Sentinel's progress and priorities for the future. It also served as a forum for stakeholders to ask questions and provide input on the Sentinel Initiative, and was really intended to be a way to make sure everybody's up to speed on the major activities of the initiative and has a sense of where it's headed. And I think it was particularly timely because so much is going on with respect to Sentinel now, and there are some important new steps ahead in the months to come. For those of you who did not make it to Washington, D.C. for the public workshop or would like to revisit the discussions from that meeting, and there were some really sharp discussions, today's webinar is another opportunity to hear about the questions and issues and capture your feedback on the program. This webinar is going to provide some highlights, including an overview of the accomplishments of the mini Sentinel pilot to date. There are a lot of them, particularly over the past year. Previous discussions have acknowledged the potential for electronic health data to help generate evidence for guiding healthcare decisions and to do it in a more timely and comprehensive way than has been possible in the past. And Mini Sentinel is already turning this concept into a real-world system capable of querying a distributed data system to yield results to safety questions in a much more rapid manner. This system, though, is intended to complement, not replace, the other tools that FDA relies on for medical product safety surveillance. It's an additional, potentially very important tool for addressing questions related to evidence, particularly around safety surveillance for products on the market. Many Sentinels now progress to a juncture where talking about Sentinel communications, both what Sentinel is and how to understand its findings as those begin to come out, is very timely and appropriate. Our public workshop featured a stakeholder panel exploring this topic, and today's webinar is going to touch on the key points from that conversation as well. So our main areas of focus, again, are what's been accomplished and what's lying ahead for the mini Sentinel pilot and the next steps in Sentinel coming out of that, and very important issues around communication and public education and participation in the Sentinel activities and its findings. Today's webinar is going to be an online web presentation. All your lines should be automatically muted when you dialed in, but if you could confirm that your phone or computer is muted, we would appreciate it to minimize any background noise. To mute your phone, you can simply press *6. To unmute it, you press *7. So *6 to mute, *7 to unmute. Also, you can mute using the mute button on your phone, obviously. And during the webinar, we really encourage you to use the Q&A tab at the top of your screen to submit questions or comments at any time during the presentation. These questions are going to be put into a queue, and when we get to that part of the webinar, we'll call on you to ask your question. Then at the end of the session, if time permits, we'll open up the lines for those of you who are participating only by phone, who aren't online in the webinar itself, to ask questions as well. If you have any technical problems along the way during this webinar, please call the Brookings IT Help Desk. They're at 202-797-6193. So with that, I'd like to introduce today's presenters. We're joined by Richard Platt, the chair of the Department of Population Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Institute. Rich is also the principal investigator on the contract with FDA to develop Mini Sentinel and gave an extensive presentation at the public meeting in January. We're also joined by Ed Staffa, who's a writer and editor at the Office of Communications for the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research at the Food and Drug Administration. Ed also was a lead participant in the Sentinel event in January as well. I know on your original agenda, also noted that Bob Temple from FDA was going to be joining us as well. Unfortunately, because of an urgent late conflict, he is not able to be on the call today, but we are aiming to cover the same subject matter with our other presenters. After the presentations from Rich and Ed, we're going to open up the lines for your questions and comments. And again, you can submit those questions or comments at any time during the presentations using the Q&A tab at the top of your screen. So next, I'd like to hand this over to our presenters. We're going to start with Rich Platt with an update on MiniSentinel's accomplishments and its emerging role, the emerging role of the Sentinel system in drug safety. Rich, if you're with us, make sure your phone's unmuted, *7 if you need to, and please go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much. So this is a sound check. How are we doing?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, good, thanks. So this is the first time that summary of what MiniSentinel has been up to can't really accomplish everything we're doing in one listenable bite. And so when we get to the end of the presentation, I'll give you some information about how to find more about what we're doing. And I'll focus on the things that I think those of you who have been following along would find to be newer of greatest interest. As a refresher, this is the charge that MiniSentinel has from FDA. Develop scientific operations for an active medical product safety surveillance system. Create a coordinating center with access to automated healthcare data systems that allow us both to develop methods that could be used in a fully operational active surveillance system and provide FDA the opportunity to evaluate safety issues and learn about how these kinds of systems can perform. There are 32 organizations that participate in MiniSentinel as formal contractors. The newest organization to join is on the right side of this slide. That's Optum, which is a United company. So I'll just remind you that the national health plans that are participating in the MiniSentinel are HealthCorps, Kaiser, the HMO Research Network, Aetna, Humana, and Optum, which is working with United Data. Also new since last year is the fact that Aetna's population is now sort of is fully engaged in the MiniSentinel activity, and the Optum United Data will come online later this year. The MiniSentinel has built a common data model to represent the data that the health plans have. Last year, we had the administrative data shown here. During this past year, we have been working hard to make EHR data available. That's shown here in the middle of the slide, height, weight, blood pressure, temperature, and laboratory results, which sometimes come from EHRs and sometimes come from direct laboratory feeds to the health plans. We're in the process of building out links to state immunization registries to supplement the vaccine exposure data that the health plans have. The distributed database is a major resource of the MiniSentinel. These are the members of the health plans that are participating. And the reason that we put such emphasis on this is that these are defined populations for whom we know the person time for which, if a medically attended event occurs, we are very likely to know about it. And since all of these people have pharmacy benefits, we're likely to know about a large class of medications if they are dispensed. The population now is 126 million individuals. That's a substantial increase from last year. Many of you know that the FDA Amendment Act of 2007 required FDA to have the ability to perform safety evaluations in a population of at least 100 million. That deadline for doing that is July of this year. So the MiniSentinel has effectively reached that FDA-mandated goal pretty well ahead of schedule. The 126 million people represent these number of hundreds of millions of person lives, of person years of observation time. There are in the mid 40 million individuals who are currently enrolled, accumulating new data. like McDonald's, there are billions served, and I'll just show you at the bottom of this slide the progress on bringing in laboratory test results. 13 million people have at least one laboratory test result. So those data are now being extensively data checked, and we expect to be able to start using that data for safety evaluations in the next few months. We're doing a lot of work on developing additional data resources for FDA. That includes expanding the base population, and the major work there this year is to work with Optum to be able to use the United population. I mentioned that we're incorporating data from a number of states' immunization registries. Under the guidance of the Center for Biologics, we are exploring the ability to assess exposures and outcomes of blood products. We're finalizing the work on vital signs and laboratory data. We've put a lot of attention to understanding how to use these data. Last year, the Mini Sentinel did systematic reviews of 20 outcomes, health outcomes that were of particular interest for understanding drug-associated safety events. And this year, we're doing another 18 systematic reviews that are focusing on outcomes that are of particular interest for studying vaccine safety. And we continue to put a substantial amount of effort into understanding the performance characteristics of the automated data for diagnosis. That is, we operate principally by using coded information that's available to the health plans, and we know that that information isn't perfect. And so we are selecting specific outcomes that are of great interest to FDA and doing an evaluation that includes retrieving full-text medical records and having expert adjudicators classify the true status of these individuals. This work is very attentive to patient privacy issues, and so the records are obtained by the health plans of whom they are members. The protected health information is redacted from those records before they are made available to the expert adjudicators. The work that's on the horizon is to put additional effort into extracting more information from electronic health records and to start working with state birth registries. We're also putting substantial effort into expanding our library of programs that allow us to query the data quickly and efficiently. That means more kinds of pre-compiled data, more flexible options for FDA in order to be able to customize the queries. We're in active discussion about building better confounder adjustment methods into these routine programs. And we're because of the extra emphasis on vaccine studies in particular, we're being attentive to implementing self-control designs, which are suitable for in a variety of circumstances, some of which occur with a number of vaccines. The Mini Sentinel operates, as I think many of you know, as a distributed data system. That means the data that the health plans are in possession of stays with the health plans. They put their data into a standard format that conforms to the common data model that we were just talking about. They keep it behind their firewall. And then when FDA initiates a query, that query comes from the operations center to through a network portal to the health plans that can review the program, and then execute the program, review the results, and return those results to the data center. The
hey, Rich. Real quick. This is Greg. We've received a number of queries from the audience for you to speak up just a bit.
Okay. So keep egging me on. The data that goes back to the health plans from the health plans to the data center is almost always summary data, counts or tables, not information that has identifiable information about any of these patients. So the system has the great virtues of allowing the useful information that's in these data systems to be serve FDA's purpose without requiring individuals' protected health information to be aggregated or shared with any organization outside the health plan that already has the data. I'll spend the next few minutes talking about the kinds of work that we're actually doing with FDA now. Although we're still in early days in terms of being able to handle the questions that FDA is interested in, we have been able for the past 8 months or so to be able to provide useful information to support FDA's decision making. The four major categories of activities that are going on are shown on this slide. Simply characterizing populations who are being treated with specific kinds of agents, talking about the kinds of treatments they receive and the health events that that either precede or follow treatment. FDA has brought to the mini-sentinel a number of questions that have arisen about products that have been in use for a while, and the mini-sentinel has been able to rapidly summarize the accumulated experience of the individuals who are in the population. The third major category of activity is assessing the impact of FDA's actions, and then finally, monitoring the accumulating experience for new products. The drill there is to be ready to evaluate a product as it's introduced into practice. So I'll give an example of each of those. On the exposure side, MiniSentinel has responded to dozens of queries. I've shown here in a collapsed form largely the classes of therapeutic agents for which FDA has requested information about the number and the age, sex, and temporal distribution of use of these medical products. The largest number has been regarding drugs, but we've also evaluated vaccines and some devices. Let me just do a sound check again. Am I doing okay in terms of volume?
I think you are, Rich.
Okay. On the health events side, I show here a number of examples of the kinds of queries that FDA has put to the mini-sentinel. And sometimes we put those things together. This is an example of evaluating the health event history of new users of an agent. The example is Prasugrel, which is indicated to prevent thrombotic events in patients with acute coronary syndrome. It's contraindicated in patients who have a history of transient ischemic attacks or stroke. FDA was interested in knowing how often patients who were treated with Prasugrel had a history of TIA or stroke, and they asked us to compare that experience to that of patients who were initiated on clopidogrel, another platelet antagonist, but one that doesn't have the same contraindication. And we used these pre-existing programs, these so-called modular programs that are reusable programs for which you can you can specify the agents of interest and the type of population that that you want to characterize to show that there were 150,000 new users of clopidogrel, about 7,000 new users of prasugrel, and you can see that there there is a substantial difference in the rate of prior stroke and prior TIA between these two agents. Over about 17% of clopidogrel users had a prior history of stroke compared to just under 8% for clopidogrel, and similar fractions for TIA. So the real strength of this work is to be able to provide this kind of information to FDA on a very short timeline. The turnaround for this is quite rapid and provides information that would otherwise be very hard to come by. Even the idea of talking about new users is something we're able to do because a great deal of time and effort went into creating the capability of identifying individuals who were continuous members for at least 365 days before the first dispensing of these agents, so that it's possible to say these are new users with a look back of 365 days. As with just about everything that MiniSentinel does, there are substantial limitations because the purpose here is to provide useful data quickly rather than trying to nail down all of the things that might be of concern. So the major conclusion here is some prasugrel users did have prior diagnoses of TIA or stroke, though fewer than is true for clopidogrel users. That, of course, depends on these codes being accurate enough for this purpose because they weren't validated in the MiniSentinel. And we've talked about the fact that the definition of a new user is 1 year, so that it's possible that that some of these patients may have had prior experience with one of these drugs, and it's possible that they could have had a stroke or TIA more than a year earlier than this date and not be noted that way. I'm going to shift now to talking about assessing concerns that arise about products in use, and for this we have a reusable program that is able to relate outcomes at health events that might be outcomes to specific exposures. So the story starts this way. Let me show you the examples of the kinds of exposure and health event pairs that we've evaluated for FDA. Angiotensin receptor blockers and new onset celiac disease, drugs for smoking cessation and cardiac outcomes, drugs for Parkinson's disease and myocardial infarction or stroke, analeptics and cutaneous adverse reactions, oral hypoglycemic agents and hypersensitivity reactions, atypical antipsychotics and hypersensitivity reactions, VEGF inhibitors and osteonecrosis of the jaw, the direct thrombin inhibitors and warfarin with hemorrhage as the outcome, and aspirin antagonists and stroke or transient ischemic attack. I'll show you, and I'll do that first one as a worked example, the angiotensin receptor blockers and celiac disease. FDA inquired about this after identifying a potential signal in the AERS database of one specific angiotensin receptor blocker and celiac disease. The review of the cases wasn't conclusive, and so they asked us to take a look at it. And here's what MiniSentinel found. I'm showing only the angiotensin receptor blockers for which there were at least 10,000 new users. As you can see here, the number of new users for these five agents ranges from 25,000 new users to almost a quarter of a million new users. And this shows you the number of individuals who had a first diagnosis of celiac disease by ICD-9 codes per 100 person years of exposure. Just point out that the agent that triggered the that was responsible for the signal in the spontaneous report database was olmesartan, which happens to be nestled right in the middle of the range for these five agents. Long list of limitations about why this shouldn't be taken as the final truth about the risk of celiac disease. And FDA needs to speak to the way it used this data, but my secondhand reporting of that is that it provided a way to help FDA gauge the intensity of the response that it needed to mount for the signal in the AERS database. We are in the process of putting all of our results online on the Mini Sentinel website, and so this is a screenshot of the report from the example that I just showed you, it provides the large majority of all of the information that these programs provide, and which Mini Sentinel makes available to FDA. Switching now to one-time protocol-based assessments, there are a large number of questions for which the existing repertoire of pre-written programs just aren't sufficient. And for those, a work group develops a protocol to evaluate the exposures and outcomes. And I've listed here six of those protocol-based assessments that are underway. And I'll give you a quick tour of where several of them stand. The Mini Sentinel data partners are looking at rotavirus vaccines and intussusception. There have been close to 2 million vaccine doses identified in 700,000 individuals. The number of potential cases of intussusception identified by discharge diagnosis codes is 64. These charts are now being reviewed by an expert adjudication panel, so that it'll be possible to know with reasonable certainty how many of these cases were real cases, and to assign them to the sort of appropriate exposed or non-exposed categories. The HPV4 vaccine, that's the human papillomavirus vaccine, and venous thromboembolism. Almost a million people exposed, almost 2.5 million vaccine doses, 119 potential cases identified. Those chart reviews are underway now. And influenza vaccines and febrile seizures, this one's limited only to first doses of influenza vaccine, and there are 860,000 of those with 91 cases. I didn't point out on these last three slides that in each case, the window during which the outcome of interest counts is different. This one happens to be one day because the interest is in febrile seizures and the period of risk is only a day. But on the last slide, it was 28 days, and on the slide before that, I think it was 14 days. So these protocols are customized in terms of the period during which one looks. In the domain of monitoring the impact of FDA actions, the current activity is to evaluate the impact of the labeling change on long-acting beta agonists on the use of these drugs and health outcomes of interest. That protocol is being developed now. And finally, the work in progress on monitoring accumulating evidence is focusing on anti-diabetic drugs and acute myocardial infarction. Those of you who participated in last year's workshop know that we were planning to initiate that study last year, and that study is underway. The agent of particular interest is saxagliptin, the newest of the diabetic agents, and it's being compared to a number of other anti-diabetic agents. The protocol involves case mix adjustment by both disease risk scores and propensity scores, and here's where things stood at the end of last year. 6,000 new users of saxagliptin. You can see the number of new users of the comparator agents here. This is an evaluation that will have repeated evaluations every quarter, and it will either run for about 2 years of quarterly updates or until there's a signal of excess risk that exceeds a specified threshold, in which case this monitoring will stop and FDA will switch over to a more focused evaluation of potential risk. So lots of challenges. This is the same slide we used last year and the year before, and I think the year before that, and they're all still valid. I put them up to make clear that while we're making a lot of progress, we're also very attentive to these kinds of issues. I promised to say something about where you can find more information, and one good place is a supplement that we just published in Pharmacoepidemiology and Drug Safety. This is 34 peer-reviewed articles. It weighs in at about 300 pages, and it's an open access journal. So if you take a look at the MiniSentinel at the Pharmacoepidemiology and Drug Safety website, you'll find all the full text articles there, and there are links to it on the MiniSentinel website. The MiniSentinel website is here. We've put as much of the additional material as we have ready on that website, and that the website's updated on a fairly regular basis. So that's the quick tour of where we are now. Thank you. So handing it back to you, Mark.
Okay. Greg, do we want to take questions or comments now? Well,
our plan was to go directly to Ed's presentation. We haven't received any questions yet online, so perhaps if we go straight to Ed, then by the end we'll have questions for both.
Okay, great. So, Ed, if you're ready, same guidance, please press star 7 to unmute and go ahead. Not yet hearing you if you're with us, so star 7.
Can you hear me?
There we go. Thanks, Ed.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, and thanks, Rich. I can't see my slides on the screen yet.
Okay, Ed, we're trying to get yours on right now. We thought we had them on, but perhaps another computer is operating this. Just bear with us, and we'll get that rectified.
Looks like they're coming up now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. So thanks a lot, Rich, for that presentation. And it's clear from what we saw in Rich's slides that Sentinel has really made a great deal of progress and continues to make a great deal of progress. And it's great for me as a communications person to be here and sharing information with you, because I think the fact that we are now at a stage in Sentinel where we're communicating or we're thinking about and working on communicating results from Sentinel represents a real milestone in and of itself. Can someone advance the slide? Thanks. You know, the reason why this is a milestone is that until relatively recently, Sentinel has been mostly an idea for a new kind of safety surveillance capability that Rich mentioned was active surveillance, and I'll probably explain that just a little bit in this presentation as well. But now, instead of just an idea, we actually have a live, up-and-running, working model, and that's why we're now discussing communicating its results. The working model, of course, is called MiniSentinel, and the overall program for this active surveillance effort is called Sentinel. Just very quickly, a little background. Active surveillance involves seeking out data, which in our case often involves secure access to electronic claims data or medical records, usually from healthcare plans, that help us analyze the medical products and their safety. Prior to Sentinel, one of our key safety surveillance tools involved reporting of adverse events sent to us by others about medical products, and safety assessments from those are called passive surveillance. So Sentinel is now providing us a new way of assessing safety and is giving us sort of a complete tool set of both active and passive surveillance. So very exciting stuff. Again, just a little bit more background. A 2007 law called the Food and Drug Amendments Act, FDA, authorized FDA to develop this active surveillance, and that's what we call Sentinel. This is Sentinel program. The law set some goals for us to ensure our progress, and as Rich mentioned, we are comfortably achieving those goals. In July of 2010, we had a goal of reaching 25 million lives. We reached that very comfortably before that goal, before that time. And the next goal was 100 million lives by July of 2012. We've already met that. I think Rich mentioned in his presentation up to 126 million lives, so more than 6 months ahead of schedule or so. So we have this first-of-a-kind working model of an active surveillance tool with secure access to healthcare data from 100 million lives. I believe it's 17 data partners to date. And what does this mean with regard to communications? I'm sorry, can you advance the slide? Before we can effectively communicate the findings from Sentinel, we need to make sure that the system is clearly understood in general, which means it's important that we communicate what Sentinel is so that communicating its findings makes more sense. So let me just take a few minutes to describe what Sentinel is and what it is not. First, let's keep in mind Sentinel now has a working model, but it's still not complete. Mini Sentinel is still a pilot and it's still developing. Also, I think it's natural that we have all this positive news about Sentinel, its progress, its new active surveillance capabilities, and therefore people may get some inaccurate views of what the system's current and even ultimate capabilities will be. So here are a couple of key points that we work on regarding our communication of Sentinel. Sentinel is a tool designed to enable safety scientists to have access to results using medical product data that they can analyze and assess complex safety issues. So as powerful as a tool as it is, it's not meant to provide definitive answers. As you saw in Rich's presentation, it's a data tool. We don't ask Sentinel a simple question like, is this product safe, and expect to get a clear yes or no answer. As Rich also mentioned, we send the system essentially a query, which is a scientific request for data. And once we receive that data, we have a whole team of clinicians and scientists, epidemiologists, statisticians, and so forth, looking at these data to determine their meaning. You advance the slide. And another important message, communication aspect of Sentinel that I think is worth mentioning, Rich mentioned also, is that Sentinel is not replacing other surveillance tools at FDA that we use to monitor safety. We've often said it's one more tool in the FDA's toolbox. We already have passive surveillance. We add active surveillance and put those together to make our safety and regulatory actions and decisions. All of our tools have strengths and limitations. No different with Sentinel, no different with passive surveillance, error reports, clinical studies, and so forth. So the information that we receive from Mini Sentinel and or Sentinel will be a valuable addition to other information that we have on safety issues. Importantly, it's not likely going to be often that in the that Sentinel investigations will singly determine whether a product is safe or not. So Sentinel is a combined information tool. Next slide, please. So when we get results back from our queries that we send, we receive data, and these data will have different degrees of uncertainty associated with them, and that we wrestle with communicating uncertainty regardless of the data source. So, for instance, after analyzing results from any given query, FDA scientists might conclude that a certain drug may have a risk, but other information may show that it may not have a risk. So we will balance all of that information before we communicate a risk on any particular given product. So why is this important? If we only communicate findings from Sentinel, it could be somewhat misleading. We need to make sure, as we do now, to provide our safety findings in a way that people see them as an aggregate to our safety assessments. And I think this is especially important because we always want to be transparent, meaning keeping the public informed. So when mini Sentinel findings are posted, many times we're doing just that, keeping people informed on what we're doing with mini Sentinel, and we are not necessarily implying or communicating any particular risk or safety with such kinds of postings. If, however, those findings become combined with other findings to the point where they can, scientists conclude a possible risk with the product, then we can communicate that separately. For instance, one of the ways we communicate drug safety issues at FDA is through a drug safety communication, sometimes called a DSC. So communicating findings from Sentinel is not necessarily or is different than communicating risk based on those findings. Next slide. So just to wrap up, Sentinel is clearly making a lot of great progress. Like all scientific data, the findings include uncertainty, and we need to make sure that we communicate those uncertainties appropriately, and that we will continue to keep the public informed as Sentinel continues to make progress. And next slide is just a couple of more areas of where you can get more information. Our site here, the FDA, they're long links, but if you just search the terms, you can find the Sentinel webpage, find the mini Sentinel webpage with which Rich discussed. And we've also put together a summary book on Sentinel that came out in July of 2010 after we met the 25 million goal, that is a user-friendly, if you will, summary of Sentinel and a general description of what it is, and that's available online in PDF form. And with that, I'll wrap up and we can take questions.
Thanks very much for the presentation, Ed. Maybe if I could just start off with a question for you, and you highlighted this on your last slide, that the Sentinel findings include uncertainty. That's a pretty common characteristic for the evidence and data that come into FDA about medical products. I'm sure some of our listeners are already familiar with it, but could you say a few more words about how FDA handles the general problem of for medical products that are on the market? A lot of information comes in from a lot of different sources, Sentinel potentially being an important new one, but FDA has to go through a process of sorting that all out. Can you say a little bit about the communication steps associated with that process?
Well, they're you know, a team-oriented approach. There's a lot of people involved. There are, you know, people from the surveillance side of things that work with the experts on the medication per se and the data collection process, and work together to gather information from a variety of sources and make sure they weigh each source before they communicate a conclusion. Sometimes they're conflicting sources, and as anyone on the phone who's a scientist know, sometimes scientists within the agency can and do interpret data differently. So it's a deliberative process, but it's one that we do all the time, and we've learned to do very well. We do it systematically, but it's always challenging because communicating uncertainty in and of itself creates some sort of miscommunication sometimes or misperceptions.
Great. Well, thank you. I've got a few more questions, but I'd like to open this up to the other participants. And, Greg, I think we have a few comments in the queue right now.
We do. First question is from Philip Burstein. Phil, are you on the line? Do you want to ask your question? And I think this is for Rich.
I'm on the line, if you can hear me.
Yes.
And I was just curious on, and I think I know this, but I wanted to hear from Rich how Sentinel is working with OMOP.
It's working pretty closely. There's ongoing connection through sort of shared membership on various committees and working groups. For instance, I'm a member of the OMOP executive board. A number of mini Sentinel investigators are part of the OMOP safety science board or technical advisory committees. We have effectively divided the work on the systematic reviews for health outcomes of interest. The OMOP started ahead of us and really established the mechanism that we then used. There are a dozen health outcomes systematic reviews that OMOP initiated, in addition to the 20 that I described Mini Sentinel doing. We spend a substantial amount of time thinking about the results that OMOP has generated so far, and Tom Skarnecchia, the director of the OMOP program, and we are now planning a methods research agenda that is coordinating the activities of the OMOP and Mini Sentinel.
Hey, Rich, as long as we're on that topic, could you say a few more words about what you think maybe at the, you and Tom think maybe at the top of that methods research agenda?
I'd rather Tom and I take it another level before I sort of blurt it out to the whole world. I think it's
okay. Well, another number.
We'd be better off doing it that way, I think.
Okay, we have a question from Jill Weschler, and then after Jill, we'll go to Ken Hornbuckle. Jill, are you on the line? Okay, so I'll go ahead and read her question. Jill's question is about whether or not Sentinel is likely to be useful in designing clinical trials for new medical products. In other words, in selecting comparators, anticipating safety issues, and researching new indications.
So I say it's a very appealing concept to be able to do that, and we've had the very earliest discussions about how that might take place. Our mandate from FDA now is do safety work, but I'd say this is one of a large class of very sort of interesting uses to which we could put the resources that includes data and expertise, and it's a very appealing prospect.
Great. Next question is from Ken Hornbuckle. Ken, are you on? Okay, just want to remind folks to go ahead and unmute your line if you want to go ahead and ask, but I'll ask this question for Ken. This is if we can comment on the timing of FDA to communicate findings from mini-sentinel in relation to an overall assessment of the benefits and risks of a product. I think that could go to either you, Rich, or Ed.
Oh, Ed, I think you're much better for this one than I am.
Well, as Rich said, information can be retrieved rather quickly depending on what the query is, and then I think it depends a lot on what the issue is and how much analysis needs to go into whatever comes back from a query. Typically, we can, for work that we do now with safety issues that come to us, once we have established enough evidence and need to communicate it, it's usually out within a matter of a week or so, and that's usually because it involves a lot of checking and verification with all of the team to make sure that we're all on message with what we want to say and how we want to say it.
I guess the one additional thing to say is that as a matter of policy, we are moving to a practice of posting the results of the completed analyses that we do for FDA within 60 days of the end of the calendar quarter in which the analysis occurs. So the FDA has been pretty clear with us that it expects all of the results of the assessments we do to be posted. So there is a schedule for communicating that kind of information once the analyses are complete.
Yeah, and I think it's an important point to differentiate between the findings and the analyses that are posted, as Rich just said, and the timing on any communications that would result if conclusions were made that needed to be communicated about risks associated with those findings.
Yep.
Okay, great. We have one more question that was submitted electronically. Now there's two. Okay, so the next one would be John Alden, and then after that we'll go to Judith Kramer. John, are you on the line? Okay, John, you just raised your hand. You didn't type a question, so I won't be able to ask anything on your behalf. If you can unmute your line, then ask your question. Okay, John, it looks like you just emailed a question in, so I'll read that for you. Would this data potentially provide any insight on the incidence and prevalence of a disease, for example, in Parkinson's disease, and perhaps by some measures of geography?
The short answer is yes, and the longer answer is but there are a bunch of caveats.
Okay. We can.
But if you want, hey, Rick, can you expand on that a little bit?
Okay. The great strength of the distributed data set is that it contains a great deal of information that was developed for another purpose, that is either for clinical care or for administrative purposes, and so the correspondence between the coded data and the clinical concepts that we care about sometimes is known to be terrific, and we can just use it. And sometimes we have to do a substantial amount of work to understand how, whether or not it's good, or more often, what steps you have to take to make it good enough for a specific purpose. And so, depending on the condition, the data may be extremely useful or only somewhat useful. There are a bunch of facts about the way healthcare is delivered in this country, which means that we typically don't have lifetime histories for most of the 126 million people, which means which means if it's important to know about a history or an extended follow-up, this data set is often quite limited in its ability to do that. So those are the kinds of things that we have to take into consideration when trying to use this to do descriptive epidemiology.
Great. Thanks, Rich. Just to remind everybody, if you have a question, to go ahead and press star 7 to unmute your line. So I'll turn to Judith Kramer. Judith, if you're on, you want to ask your question?
Sure. First, thanks to Rich and Ed for a fantastic update on your activities. I actually just wanted to get a clarification on the questioner, not the last question, but the one before that. If I heard it correctly, it sounded like the questioner was asking how quickly FDA would be communicating information about the balance of benefit and risk of a product, and that sort of, I didn't hear that, if I heard the question correctly, I didn't hear that addressed, and I think I know the answer, but one of the questions is this initiative looking at all on benefit of products, or is it focused solely on safety issues?
And Judy, was your question specifically about communicating sentinel findings or sentinel findings as part of the overall ongoing communication about risks and benefits of a product?
Well, you probably should ask the person who asked the question, but I thought the person was saying in response to the analyses they do on mini sentinel, will FDA be communicating the balance of, how quickly will it be communicating the balance of benefit and risk, which implied that mini sentinel was the source of that. Obviously, there would be a lot of other information brought to the table in addressing that, but maybe I misunderstood the question in the first place. I just thought it should be clarified.
I wonder if Melissa Robb is on the phone. She's one of our sentinel leads. Melissa, if you're on the phone, maybe you could tackle that question.
Well, Melissa's not. This is Mark McClellan again. Maybe I can go back to the answers that we heard so far. So Rich outlined the policies for posting the results of Sentinel queries at this point, which is to get the results of completed analyses up within the following quarter, if I heard Rich right. As Judy said in her question, though, that's not interpretation of the results. That's just the results themselves, and I would assume that the interpretation of the results is going to depend, and communication about that interpretation is going to depend on a lot of factors like Ed described earlier that go beyond the Sentinel findings alone.
So, Mark, the direct question is Sentinel pursuing questions about the benefit of these agents in the population?
Yeah, and we're not doing that at the moment. And my understanding of the FDA amendment instruction is that it focuses on safety. In conversation, I think everyone appreciates that safety by itself is an incomplete view of products. And so, how the FDA is integrating these findings with other kinds of information is a really important discussion. But the short answer is, at the moment, Mini Sentinel is focusing on safety.
Hi, this is Rob. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to follow up. I think what there's many potential capabilities of a system like Sentinel, and right now our current focus is on safety. But we often say the Sentinel today will look very different from the Sentinel 25 years from now. So as the data and the methods to use those data evolve, so will likely our application of the system.
Okay, and we don't have any further questions from the electronic system.
And we also, I think, are about out of time for the webinar. So I think there's a lot more that we could talk about. And I know some very interesting plans for the year ahead for the continued evolution of Mini Sentinel and the Sentinel system. We will come back to these topics on future webinars, but in the meantime, I'd very much like to thank Rich and Ed for their presentations, for Melissa for doing some on-the-spot question answering too, and especially all of you who tuned in for the webinar today. The presentation materials, including audio, are going to be posted on the Brookings website in the next few days. We also will have available the handouts from the meeting in January, and would like to remind you that this is a regular webinar, and we'll have another one coming up within the next couple of months, so look for an announcement about that in the near future. We hope that you'll be able to join us for that webinar as well. We really appreciate these discussions and hope to see you at other future events too. Thanks again for participating this afternoon, and I hope you all enjoy the rest of your day.